da-dee-da. If it isn't Patrick Madrid.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, let's see what he has to say.
Wow, is that who I think it is?
I don't know who that was or where they came from.
Wow, he's a fan? That's cool.
I thought he was at the Laker game. I didn't know he was here in the studio.
That is amazing. How'd you get him to say that? You have your ways.
I didn't get him to do anything, Patrick.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me.
Nobody gets him to do anything he doesn't want to do.
Doesn't want to do. Okay, well, that's a great way to start the show. I love it. 888-914-9149. You can call that number right now. We'll get you on the air because we only have a few people waiting, and that will change quickly. The lines get jammed up quickly. 888-914-9149. Email patrick@relevantradio.com. Just want to point out to you that some of the doorbell cameras that are sold by Amazon, according to Consumer Reports anyway, the Chinese government always seems to find its way into things. According to an investigation published last week by Consumer Reports, they found issues with cameras manufactured by the Chinese company Eken Group Limited. That's E-K-E-N. It produces video doorbells that are sold by, among other places, Amazon. You might have one. Engineers Steve Blair and David Della Rocca, they discovered the problems while evaluating several video doorbells for Consumer Reports. The researchers found the doorbell cameras made by this company, Eken Group, can be controlled by a company-operated app. They said, and the app is called iWit, A-I-W-I-T. Kind of sounds like a put-down. Hey, iWit. They said people can create an account on the app and gain access to your doorbell camera by pairing it with another device. That gives them the ability to view footage or access still images and lock you out from your own device if they choose to do so. So FYI, I would take a look at this article. Cyrus will get a link posted to it. Consumer Reports wrote in their report, video doorbells are supposed to help you keep an eye on strangers at the door, not let other people watch you. I don't like that idea. So check it out. Also, just by way of keeping tabs on a story that we discussed a while back, Anheuser-Busch, remember the whole, the whole brouhaha when they had the, I hesitated. I wasn't going to say that. And then I thought, what the heck? It's the Patrick Madrid Show. What the heck? Throw puns around. Yeah, all the brouhaha. Thank you, Cyrus. I didn't know if anyone would get it. Last year when they had the trans guy, I've already forgotten his name, something Dylan. Dylan Mulvaney, that's right. And he, remember that? You remember that, Cyrus, when he was like squealing and giggling and smiling all over the place and people were sick of it. And so the Bud Light brand basically tanked because nobody wanted to buy it anymore.
Kid Rock took a machine gun to a bunch of Bud Light cases.
Yeah. So here's the update. This is from the Washington Times. Anheuser-Busch reports a collapse in U.S. revenue after the boycott. So it's, you know, 8-9 months later. Last week, they announced staggering declines in their yearly profit and revenue last year. According to the report, the company's profit declined from $7.6 billion in 2022, that's pre-Dylan Mulvaney, to $6.89 billion in 2023. Significantly, the company was hit the hardest in the U.S., where revenue cratered by just about 10% for the year and almost 18% for just the fourth quarter. Anheuser-Busch was quick to point out that overall revenue rose. According to the report, total operating profit rose by 7% last year. Worldwide revenue increased by 7.8% to $59.38 billion. Okay. The blowback came after Anheuser-Busch announced a partnership last spring with transgender Dylan Mulvaney. As the alliance became public and the influencer began featuring Bud Light products and videos, anti-transgender activists organized a boycott with conservative celebrities bringing the embargo into the mainstream. That is not true. Well, it's partly true. It is partly true that anti-transgender activists, whoever they may be, weighed in on it and Yeah, okay, conservative celebrities. I saw a few online who did the same thing. And you mentioned Kid Rock, Cyrus, so that's an example of that. What if he changed his name to Kid Cyrus? That would be interesting. Kid Cyrus. That could be your name, Cyrus, if you're looking for a new moniker. Kid Cyrus. You don't look too happy about that. Anywho, I don't think it was that predominantly. I think that the reason that Anheuser-Busch and in particular Bud Light tanked is because the average person like you and me, just us average folk, we were sickened by it. And, you know, no mas. No mas. Game over. Not going to drink it.
Enough was enough.
Mm. I agree. So, you know, maybe we're saying ta-ta to Bud Light for a while. I don't know. But I was glad to see it. I really was. I was glad to see people punishing bad behavior with voting with their pocketbooks. So that's another story if you're interested in that. It's got some more details about that. 888-914-9149. How about Jim now in Chicago? Hi, Jim.
Hi, Patrick. Yeah, I grew up in Chicago. And the murder rate was twice as high when I was a kid. Mm. Nobody had cameras. Nobody had any keys at our house. I never had a key to the house. It was always open. All the doors were open in my house.
Maybe that's why the murder rate was twice as high, because nobody locked their doors.
I don't think so. Nobody in my family got murdered. And we worked and lived in Chicago all of our lives. And we didn't need cameras for anything. I don't know. Are we that terrified of each other that we have to have cameras?
Well, I like the fact that I've got a...
Are you
terrified? I'll answer your question. I like the fact that I've got a front doorbell camera and a few others.
You're probably terrified.
Well, hang on, Jim. Just let me talk for a second.
Go ahead. I'm not terrified.
I'm not terrified. I think I'm prudent. I have a family to take care of. I think people who want to keep their wives and kids safe, there's nothing... You know, you don't have to be terrified to do that. I mean,
you got to be terrified to have a camera. Nah, you got to be terrified.
So. No.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely. Yes, you do.
No, you don't. I'll give myself as Exhibit A.
I never had a camera. Never. Yeah.
Okay. Hey. It's okay. But you probably have a lock on your front door. You probably have locks on your windows. You probably have life insurance and car insurance. You probably lock your car door when you go into the grocery store, and you don't have to be terrified to do those things. It's just common sense.
No, I put my hands in the Blessed Virgin. I always told, put yourself in the hands of the Blessed Virgin and take your chances. That's what I lived in Chicago all my life. Anyway,
that's
have
cool.
A good morning.
Well, now I will. Oh, he hung up. You think he was terrified of me? I don't think so.
I have a camera on my door.
Yes, you do.
And I have
an app that lets me control it from this. Ha ha, just joking. LOL, I'm just joking.
I also have a camera in my car that records a dash cam. And
so if you're ever driving in Russia, you can get onto Fail Army with your dash cam video, right?
That's right, when someone jumps in front of my car. But it's good for if someone ever like brake checks you or I actually witnessed an accident and I had it on camera.
Were you involved in the accident?
No, fortunately I wasn't, but it was right in front of me. And so then I got to go back and look and read.
So are you terrified?
Footage.
I mean, according to Jim, you are.
No, it's actually to protect myself.
Mm.
So
but that means you're terrified.
Someone can't ram into my car and then I get in trouble for it.
That means you're terrified, doesn't it?
That'd be like saying you carry an armed weapon because you're terrified. You do that because you want to protect yourself or someone else.
So all those shopkeepers, the owners of stores and banks and all the places where the public does business and things close down at 5 p.m. or 9 p.m. and they lock their doors at night, they must be terrified. Oh, wait, or is it common sense? I kind of think it's the latter.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
I'm agreeing with you on this one.
I'd like to send Jim a doorbell camera as a parting gift for his participation on the show. That would be cool.
I don't think he wants it, Patrick.
We weren't able to get his address. It's okay, Jim. No, hey, we're still friends. It's all good. I'm your Huckleberry. So feel free to call anytime. I would enjoy a further conversation with you. Thank you. Let's go to Aaron now in Phoenix. Good morning, Aaron. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
Hi. I'm well.
Good. I was calling. I had a real quick question. My daughter is about to make her sacrament of reconciliation. She's 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to find an appropriate gift to celebrate it. The first thing that came to my mind was a children's missal, which would have the act of contrition and, you know, an examination of conscience. And then I started looking online, and there's a whole bunch of them out there, and you never quite know what you're getting. So I just wanted your recommendation on either a good children's missal for her age or perhaps a different gift that I hadn't thought of.
That's a great question. And the girl is 8, is that right?
Yes, she's 8. She's in second grade. They do their reconciliation this year.
Okay, so. Perfect.
And she's a very good reader.
Ah, that's good. Well, I'm with you in the sense that, you know, an examination of conscience for an adult would not be appropriate for a child because it will bring up sins that she will have no idea what they even are.
Right.
And she shouldn't need to know about them. I would suggest, and I'm certain, although I don't know exactly the title of it, but I'm certain that our friends at Holy Heroes would have what you're looking for. I don't know specifically what it's called, but they specialize in exactly this kind of thing for children. And their website is holyheroes.com. I have a feeling if you just poke around there a little bit, you'll find exactly what you're looking for, and certainly age appropriate for a Catholic child.
Okay, perfect. I do appreciate your recommendation.
You're welcome, Aaron. I'm happy to help and hope things are going well for you and the family.
Thank you. You too. God bless.
Thanks. Bye-bye. 888-914-9149. You can call that number now. We just had a line open up. They are filling up right now, so you don't want to wait too long or you'll get a busy signal. 888-914-9149. Let's talk to Kristen now in Philadelphia. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Patrick. I am calling. We recently inherited, my father-in-law passed away, and my husband was in Chicago cleaning out his house, and we inherited a reliquary with a relic in it, mm-hmm. and it's a piece, well, it says SS Crucis DNJC, mm-hmm. and when I looked that up, it says that it could possibly be a piece of the True Cross.
Right.
We have no documentation. We don't know the provenance of this.
Mm-hmm.
My husband doesn't remember it in the house.
Let me describe what I think it looks like, and this will help narrow things down. So is it in a kind of a round gold recessed container with a glass front? It's not made out of gold, but it's a gold finish.
Yeah.
Probably about the size of a quarter, maybe a little bit bigger than that. And it has a red velvet background. And then in the center there would be the splinter of wood. And then below that would be a tiny little strip of paper. And written in minuscule Latin would be what you just read, right? Is that how that looks? It's almost certainly a true relic and almost certainly a relic of the True Cross.
Okay. All right. So if that's the case, then we just don't feel worthy to have this in our home. I mean, I have children who are very excited and just are like so honored and overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But I also I'm thinking, how did this come to us and how can we care for it or what should we do with it? Like besides just like take care of it. I mean, I know, you know, do we donate it to a church? I mean, what should we do?
You could do that. If I were you, I would retain it in my home. I once was given by a priest who was kind of helping rescue things that were being thrown away at some this is going back decades now, but parishes in Chicago that were being renovated in the 80s. He rescued, you know, vestments and statues and even relics from saints. And he had a whole bunch of them, and he just gave them away to different people who would want them. And he said, I have a relic of St. Paul. Would you like that? I said, of course I would. So we had that relic of St. Paul. It was a little piece of bone, and it was in exactly the same kind of reliquary that I described to you, the kind that you have. And it had the documentation papers and everything. And so we venerated that in our home for many, many, many years. And then somebody asked me for it, and I thought, well, let's spread the wealth around. So I gave that relic to the person who asked me for it. So that's one thing you can do, and there's nothing untoward about that. You don't have to be particularly worthy, although I'm sure you and your family are very prayerful and virtuous. I mean, it's not as though there's a certain worthiness standard one has to achieve in order to have a relic in the home. It's a great thing if you have one, and it sounds like you do. You could donate it to the church if you wanted to. I'm sure the parish would, or I hope the parish would be grateful for that. They would have to put it in a place where it could be venerated as well. If you wanted to give it to a convent of cloistered sisters, I mean, there are any number of things you could do with this if you wanted to. But if I were you, I would hang on to it and I would put it in a place of honor in my home.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's great. Then we will do that.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm only offering a suggestion.
No, my one daughter said, Mom, let's build a home chapel.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate your help.
Most welcome, Kristen. Thank you. What a wonderful thing. Yeah, the true cross was, and I don't have any details in front of me, but St. Helen, who was the mother of the Emperor Constantine, who was the emperor who stopped the persecutions of the Catholic Church definitively when he came to power. And then not that long thereafter, he made the Catholic faith, Christianity, the state religion of the Roman Empire. And people can debate whether or not that was a wise move. But in any case, it was under his leadership as a Roman emperor in the early 4th century when all of those persecutions were at least officially ended. And his mother, who was converted to the church, he wound up being baptized on his deathbed. He was an interesting guy, and he wound up being baptized on his deathbed, but his mother converted, and she made a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. Keep in mind, so this is maybe a little more, well, I shouldn't say maybe, this is just a little bit more than 200 years after the events of the crucifixion, etc. So she went there on a pilgrimage. And of course, in those days, there were no pilgrimage sites. There were no churches built for the Lord. There were no, you know, there was no Via Dolorosa that you could walk on. But she found people there who knew exactly where these places were. So she had guides who lived in Jerusalem and said, yes, well, the place where Jesus was crucified, we all know it because it's been handed down to us from the people who were there 200 years ago, plus it's right over here. And so she paid to have these places excavated, and she found a cross and the nails and the pincers that would pull the nails out and the crown of thorns and all those things associated with the crucifixion. She found them. And based upon what people who lived there knew of this place, it was certain in their minds anyway that these were the true artifacts of our Lord's crucifixion. And so she was able to rescue them, and they now are dispersed around the world in different places, but they are the relics of the true cross. And so over the many centuries since then, there have been countless little splinters taken from the true cross, or portions of the cross and then splinters taken from that, and have found their way into reliquaries all around the world. And that's real. That's true. And it's amazing when you think about it. So yes, if you ever have an opportunity to venerate a relic of the true cross, you can count yourself as very blessed to have that opportunity. And maybe if you're visiting some of the holy places, either in Jerusalem or in Rome or in some of the other Catholic cities where these things are reposed, you'll be able to see some of them there as well. It's amazing. All right, quick time out. We're going to come back to more of your phone calls. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And that lady who asked about the examination of conscience for her child, don't forget, we have an examination of conscience for you on the Relevant Radio app. Just tap the app and click on Pray, and it'll open up a treasure house of prayerful information that you can check out. It's all free. It's all in the Relevant Radio app, and I'll be right back.
I don't know if there's any other way to say this, Patrick, but you make me want to be a better man.
Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
The Patrick Madrid Show, it's the best deal in town.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
All right. I like that beat. The Richard Harris version, this version, is way better than the Donna Summer version. Don't even try to argue with me about that.
Oh, I was all set to argue with you about that.
I saw that look on your face. Let's see. 888-914-9149. How about Nancy in Illinois? Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I'm a labor and delivery nurse, and I need some advice on how to respond to a post I've seen on social media popping around recently. It goes like this. An egg is not a chicken. A seed is not a flower. An acorn is not a tree. An embryo is not a baby. Her body is not your body.
Oh, my. The shallowness of some people is breathtaking. Okay. Well, if we wanted you, and you would be in a better position, Nancy, than I, because you are a medical professional. So right. If we want to, first of all, stipulate that we don't have to use the, you know, the terminology of, let's say, zygote and embryo and fetus. I mean, if that's the way the person is arguing, that's not a baby, because from a medical standpoint, a baby would be properly the term used for a born child. And they have the clinical terms, as you well know. So for if I were in that situation, the first thing I would try to do is, you know, is that what you're referring to? Are you referring to, you know, a zygote is not a baby in a strict, you know, sense of the different stages of development? And if that is the case, then say, okay, fine. We don't have to call it a baby, but we can certainly call this a human being, because life begins at conception. That's a human okay. being who happens to look like that at that stage of development. So when it's a one-cell zygote, that's what human beings look like at that stage of development. When it becomes, if we can say, well, now it's an embryo, well, that's what human beings look like at that stage of development. We can agree not to call it a baby if you prefer, but we can't agree if you deny the fact that that's a human being, because it is a human being, because life begins at conception. It doesn't change into a human being at some point along the way. And for that matter, the analogy with the acorn is it's a false analogy, because depending upon the kind of tree, you know, some of the trees are coniferous and some are deciduous, and so they reproduce in different ways. But to say an acorn is not a tree is like saying an ovum is not a human being. That's true. An ovum is not a human being. Mm-hmm. But ovum is to acorn. Right. Ovum is to acorn. Mm-hmm. If we're using a comparison. So it's even that is a false analogy for someone to raise that. So you can point that out. But if I were you, and this is what I've done many times, I just take my stand on the life begins at conception. Mm-hmm. And if somebody says, no, it doesn't, then I would say, prove it. Prove that that isn't life. Prove it.
Okay.
And, you know, once the slogans are torn down, there's really not much else they can say. I mean, unless you're talking to somebody who has medical knowledge and might try to browbeat you with that, but you're a medical professional, so you know better.
Mm-hmm. Well, the disturbing thing is these two people are labor and delivery nurses that I've seen mm-hmm. post it, and they're mm-hmm. like proud that they're supporting. They think they're supporting women.
I know.
I think Isn't this has silly? To do with the move to try to make in vitro fertilization illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And people are so focused on, but people want a baby, and infertility is so difficult, and I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But how many babies have to be sacrificed in order to obtain one living child?
Right.
And it's not the way God intended us to have babies anyway.
And I'll get to this when we're done talking. I've got some information about the actual reality of the treatment of these embryos as a result of IVF. I'll share that in a little bit. I don't want that to get in the way of what you're talking about, Nancy.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your advice. I wrote down what you said, and I will definitely be sharing those things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're smug in their ignorance. Mm-hmm. And if they're not ignorant, then they're, I don't know, intentionally hiding behind their slogans, because they really, 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 really like abortion. Or at least they really, really, really like the fact that abortion exists. And so they're not likely to hear you. But then again, maybe they will. It's hard to say. One thing that I pointed out also, Nancy, you can do this, is to say, well, you know, this this embryo in your body as a woman, whether you want to refer to the zygote stage or the embryo stage or the fetus stage, that's not you. That is not part of your body. He or she, the little unborn child, he or she, is not like your kidney or a mass of tissue. All of those things would be your own body producing these things. Your body has kidneys. Your body has all the various organs. Your body might produce a cyst or a tumor. That's all your body. It's got your DNA. Uh-huh. This is a separate being with different DNA. It's related to yours, but it's not yours. A different heart, different set of all the systems of the body, nervous system, all the ones that you know so well. This is not your body. This entity, this little unborn boy or girl, is his or her own person and happens to be in your body because you know what happened that resulted in this child being conceived, and this child has a right to your protection. So that's the way I approach it.
I get so tongue-tied sometimes. I want to defend life, and sometimes I don't know what to say. So appreciate everything that you've told me, and I will definitely those things.
You're most welcome, Nancy. Yeah, thank you. For those who are in Nancy's situation and would like some extra firepower, there are really good, brief commercials, very highly produced. They were produced for secular television, for commercial television, and produced by an organization called Virtue Media. And that's the website, virtuemedia.org, virtuemedia.org. Check it out because they've got all their commercials posted there in video form. And so let's say, like Nancy, let's say that you're interacting with somebody on Facebook who has posted a nonsensical slogan like the ones that she was describing. You can post that video. There are many to choose from, dozens and dozens of these really beautiful, heartfelt videos that don't get into the polemics. They get into the heart. They bypass all of the slogans and they go directly to the heart, to the way in which we regard things at a deep level to be good or bad, to be good or evil. And so my suggestion would be fight fire with fire. They post a stupid slogan. You post one of these Virtue Media videos. It's about 30 seconds each one. And as you go through there and look at them, you're going to see how touching they are. And sometimes that's all that's necessary to get somebody out from behind the silly slogans. So they'll actually start thinking about this and what this really means when we're talking about abortion. So check it out. It's virtuemedia.org, 888-914-9149. How about Kevin now in Farmington, New Mexico? Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Patrick.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, I got a question that kind of tagged on the end of that reliquary.
Yeah.
Story that we just talked about. So we've been to Wisconsin, and St. Jehoshaphat has a huge reliquary there in Milwaukee. I'm curious about a contradiction that the church is teaching is telling us when you have a cremains of a person to keep the cremains of a person together. Mm-hmm. We have reliquaries across the country, across the world, mm-hmm. and even in the altars of saints in these churches across the country. How is it that the church teaches that this is okay, but the spreading of ashes is not right?
Right. There's a really good reason, Kevin, and it is that the relics of saints it is proper for them to be dispersed because the saint is in heaven, guaranteed. And so the church proposes these saints, men, women, boys and girls, to us as models of holiness and worthy of our veneration. So we know that we can venerate these people who are friends of God and in heaven with God. And that's entirely different from you or I or anyone else who dies. And we don't know if that person has even gone to heaven. We don't know if that person has been saved. we pray for the salvation of souls, but we're in a different category until or unless the church were to ever decide to canonize you, Kevin. We would pray for your soul after you died, and rightly so. So that's the reason why, because the church does not say that you or I are worthy of veneration. The church does say that our bodies are worthy of respect and to have a dignified burial. And the church says that to disperse the ashes is not a dignified way to show respect for the temple of the Holy Spirit. But there's no inconsistency, there's no contradiction here, because there are two categories of people that we're talking about. Does that make more sense?
A little bit, but I'm still concerned on whether or not the church is calling a person or declaring them to be a saint when we have the communion of saints. So the communion of saints is a larger group of people that are not declared necessarily by name, but we do have the terms communion of saints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's actually a good part of the answer to the question you're raising. So biblically speaking, anybody who is in Christ is known as a saint. So the term saints typically in the New Testament referred to living people, but it also refers to people who have gone on to heaven. We see saints mentioned in Revelation chapter 5, for example, the holy ones they're referred to. And that's the maybe more literal translation from the Greek, hagioi, which means saints or holy ones. So in the Catholic Church, you're right, we do have the doctrine of the communion of saints, and it presupposes that there are different categories of people. So you and I, biblically speaking, can be called saints in a very minimal sense of the word, but those who are in heaven who see God face to face, they're saints in a more specific way. We're all saints, but we have a certitude that they are perfectly holy, as it says in Hebrews chapter 12. These are the souls of the just people made perfect in righteousness. We're not there yet. So it's a category distinction. And this is why, to go back to your original question, the church says, yes, you can venerate relics of saints because they are worthy of our veneration. But you can't parcel out pieces of the body, whether in ash form or whatever, of somebody who is one of the faithful who dies, because we're not even sure if that person is in heaven. So there's no question but that our relics, so to speak, should not be venerated, but they should be shown proper respect.
But so even the saints that are dispersed around the world, around the country, this is still okay. I'm still seeing a contradiction.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I mean, I would propose to you there is no contradiction. There is no actual contradiction. If you consider that, for the reasons I gave, the church has a very good set of reasons in the case of you and I to say no, and a very good set of reasons in the case of those who are in heaven to say yes. So it's the distinction between being in one category or the other. I guess that's the best way I can put it. I realize that maybe that doesn't convince you, but you asked the question, why? Why does the church do that? At its essence, that's the reason why.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for at least considering it. I realize not everything is, where do I sign on the line which is dotted? I understand that, but you know, over time, maybe it'll become more acceptable.
Yeah, I don't have a case in particular. It's something that I thought of, and then something's just not ringing true on it. And I thought, maybe Patrick will know.
Well, you know, in truth, Kevin, this is a question that has come up on a fairly regular basis. It's not like daily or anything, but it is a consistent question that is reasonable for people to wonder about. Because at first glance, it does appear as though there is a contradiction, but I'm convinced that there is no contradiction for that reason.
Okay.
All right. Well, hey, thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. 888-914-9149. And with that, we'll take a quick timeout, but we'll come right back to your phone calls. We just had a line grabbed, and we're down to just a couple. So if you want them, just call If you want one, I can give you one line, 888-914-9149, and emails too, send them to patrick@relevantradio.com. We've had more than a dozen show up, emails that is, just in the last, half hour. So send me your email, and I'll try to read it on the air if I can.
The Patrick Madrid Show, your extra strength headache remedy.
Today, we'd like to thank Tammy, who's listening in Florida, for donating her 2016 BMW Z4. Cool. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Say hello to my little friend, The Patrick Madrid Show.
Keeping it relevant. It's The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Cyrus, you'll like this. I like this. This is from Debbie. And she's riffing on Jim's call. Remember, Jim said everyone's terrified if they have locks on their doors and stuff.
That's right. Yeah. If you have a camera, if you have a doorbell camera, it's because you're terrified.
You're terrified. So Debbie wrote in just now. She said, "Hi, Patrick. I'm terrified of gum disease and cavities. That's why I routinely floss and brush."
That's a good point.
That's well done. Really good point. You want to say something, Cyrus?
Nope. I love the emails that come in. Some of them are very, very funny.
I have a note that came in from Chris, and she is listening in Chicago, and she's referring to the new Shogun series. I became aware of it. I have a daughter who got her bachelor's degree in English, and she's all over this kind of stuff. So she sent me a link to the promo for the new Shogun series. The original series that came, miniseries, came out in, 1980 or 79 or something like that. So there's a new one out. I just found out about it. And Chris says the new series on Hulu FX, Shogun, is an adaptation of the life of William Adams in the 16th century. The series is very anti-Catholic, as William Adams is. He poisoned the mind of Shogun Tokugawa, thus leading to the persecution of Japanese Catholics. Among them was also our Filipino Saint Lorenzo Ruiz. Adams didn't help spread Christianity in Japan, but helped Tokugawa in stopping it. If the spread of Catholicism wasn't stopped during the time until the majority of Japanese became Christians, Japan might not have joined World War II. This is my take on the new TV series. I hope you'll share it. Well done. She also says, thank you very much, and God bless you all at Relevant Radio and all the listeners. Thank you for that. I read the book by James Clavell when it first came out. So if the series came out, the miniseries was, let's just say 1980, and the book came out, as I recall, in the late 70s. I don't know whether this Shogun that's coming out now on Hulu, whether that's based upon, I'm sure it must be based upon James Clavell's novel. How loosely or how closely, I don't know. But the first miniseries was. But the thing to remember, if you haven't read the novel, I would read the novel if you want to understand the movie. Because the movies, in this case, really fall short of capturing the essence of what's in the book. And that's not uncommon. The book is like, 900 pages. But Anjin-san was from Holland. And I believe he was a Huguenot. Now, you mentioned William Adams. So I don't have details on that. I just know from the novel setting, so this is sort of historical fiction that James Clavell wrote in the book Shogun. And although that doesn't really play much of a part at all, as I recall, that Anjin-san, the captain of the Dutch ship that runs aground in Japan, I think he was a Huguenot, meaning that he was very anti-Catholic. And so what you're thinking about here, I'm going to assume, is because the Catholic missionaries were very successful in China and Japan and the Philippines and elsewhere. And so when the Shogun decided to close Japan down and to not permit the evangelization of the people, as you rightly point out, it was by the Catholic missionaries, I wouldn't be surprised if it was because of his animus against the Catholic Church being a Protestant. Now, I'd have to dig into the resources and find out more about that. But if I had to guess, I think that's why you see the anti-Catholic bent in terms of being against the missionaries there. So that's my take on that. And yes, I appreciate you bringing this up because I have a feeling it's going to be a big deal in many circles because the Catholic faith does figure into this story. Appreciate that. 888-914-9149. How about Michael now in Albuquerque? Hello, Michael.
Hello, sir. Well, good morning. I'm calling I have a quick question. For people that like I pray the rosary daily, and or attempt to most of the time. I was praying and someone mentioned to me that during Lent, they said tradition with like a small T is on Wednesdays when we do the glorious mysteries normally. It's prayed the sorrowful mysteries during Lent. And then same with Easter on Tuesdays and Friday when they do the sorrowful mysteries, it's replaced by the glorious mysteries during that time of the eighth octave of Easter. Can we shed any light on that?
I'll try. As you were speaking, I grabbed the copy of Pope John Paul II's Rosarium Virginis Mariae, which is his encyclical on the rosary. And in section 38, he says, I'll begin in the beginning here. The rosary can be recited in full every day, and there are those who most laudably do so. He's referring to all the mysteries of the rosary. And he says, however, many people will not be able to recite more than a part of the rosary according to a certain weekly pattern. This weekly distribution has the effect of giving the different days of the week a certain spiritual color by analogy with the way in which the liturgy colors the different seasons of the liturgical year. He's referring to the colors of the vestments, for example.
Yeah.
Green, okay. Purple, etc. So here's where he gets to the point you're asking about. According to current practice, Monday and Thursday are dedicated to the joyful mysteries, Tuesday and Friday to the sorrowful mysteries, and Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday to the glorious mysteries. And he adds, he proposes, he doesn't insist upon, but he suggests that those who want to add the luminous mysteries can do so. So he doesn't talk in this about what you're describing, about changing during Lent or during the preparation for Easter and switching them around. You're free to pray any mystery of the rosary on any day that you wish. This is the custom, but it's not a requirement. So if you prefer to switch it around and pray the glorious mystery on a different day, you're free to do that. It's just a guideline. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And can you give me that mystical name one more time?
Sure. So Rosarium. So it's actually an apostolic letter. I mistakenly said it was an encyclical. So it has an even higher level of authoritativeness. So Rosarium, Rosarium. Virginis, Virginis. And then Mariae. So write Maria and then put an E at the end. Rosarium Virginis Mariae, which means the Rosary of the Virgin Mary.
Oh, perfect. Well, thank you so much. Okay. I appreciate it for the clarification. I appreciate that.
You're most welcome. Thank you, and I appreciate the call. Let's go to Jesse now in California. Hi, Jesse.
Patrick.
Hi.
Hi, I was calling this morning to ask about when Jesus overturned tables and was angry for people selling goods at the temple of God. And I just wanted to know, Matthew chapter 5, 22, verse 44, Jesus says, do not be angry with anyone or it'll be judged upon you. And he says also, according to the seven deadly sins, wrath is part of anger. So I just wanted to know what's the difference there and if you can kind of clear things up for me.
I'll do my best. Yeah, let's read Matthew 5:22. So, and we're going to read it from, why don't we read it from the Revised Standard Version here. So Jesus says, let me find it again. I had it in front of me, and let me find it again. So Jesus says, just give me 1 second. It was there, and then it wasn't there. So he says, but I say to you, that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be liable to judgment. That's the passage you're referring to, right?
Yes.
Okay. And whoever insults his brother shall be liable to the council, and whoever says, you fool, shall be liable to the hell of fire. So This, of course, is reminding us that anger can indeed be sinful, but it's not always sinful. And that's the distinction here. So this kind of anger he's referring to here is where you harbor a kind of hatred for your neighbor. You seek his punishment or his, you seek revenge in some way. There are different ways that this could be the case. But that is a sinful type of anger. Now, there's a non-sinful kind of anger, which is necessary, of course, because if you don't have that kind of anger, you might never be roused to defend somebody who's being harmed, for example. You know, to have an anger that is good. We also refer to that kind of anger as righteous indignation, where you see something that is going wrong, and it can even be in yourself. Do you ever find yourself angry? Why did I do that? Why did I say that? How come I did that? That kind of anger is good because it rouses you to correct a problem. So to put it simply, I would say what you're looking at here are two different forms of anger. Not all anger is sinful. Often it is. St. Thomas Aquinas has, in his treatise on the virtues in the Summa Theologiae, he has a whole section on anger. And he talks about this very point. And he quotes scripture and he says, some anger is necessary and virtuous. Most of the time, though, anger is sinful because it seeks, you know, something other than the good for the person that you're angry with. You see the distinction there, Jesse?
Yes, exactly. If it's something that's going to hurt somebody or hate or that's looking towards revenge or the harm of other people, then it's bad anger. But if you have anger to where you're defending the good or you're trying to do good, I mean, it's okay. And that's where I had trouble, because there is times where I get angry and it's because of good reason. And I believe that I heard that same thing you just had told me, and I just wanted to make sure, because there's times where it's good to have that anger so you're able to be aware of things that aren't right. So
exactly. You put it very well. So here's what I'm going to do. If you're at all interested, I'm going to retweet a tweet that I put up 4 or 5 years ago with the link to where St. Thomas describes the kind of anger that's sinful and the kind of anger that's not sinful. And if you happen to have your Summa Theologiae on the table next to you, it's question 158, and you'll be able to find it easily with the link that I'm giving you. Okay?
Okay, absolutely. Thank you, Patrick.
You're most welcome. I appreciate it. Oh, and by the way, it's in the second part of the second part of the Summa. Question 158, anger. Is it lawful to be angry? Is anger a sin? Is it a mortal sin? Is it the most grievous of sins? Is anger a capital vice? And so on. So he really digs into this question. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Yes, I believe I will. It'll be very helpful. And you're very helpful as well. And I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Kind of you say so. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to John quickly. We can't. Okay, John, stand by. I'll come to you after the break.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I thought so. I've heard that before, and I want to act accordingly. Yeah, so I will know my limitations, some of them anyway.
You're a legend in your own mind.
Oh, you've been talking to Nancy, have you? 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, and let's see, just looking for some emails I can pop out quickly, but I can't because there's the music. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Oh yeah, totally. The Patrick Madrid Show is 100% legal. For now, anyway.